Chapter 36. Upon the whole, I was by this time so fixed upon my design of going over with him to the continent, that I told him we would go, and make one as big as that, and he should go home in it. He answered not one word, but looked very grave and sad. I asked him what was the matter with him. He asked me again, "Why you angry mad with Friday? What me done?" I asked him what he meant. I told him I was not angry with him at all. "No angry," says he, repeating the word several times. "Why send Friday home away to my nation?" "Why," says I, "Friday, did not you say you wished you were there?" "Yes, yes," says he, "wish we both there. No wish Friday there, no master there. In a word, he would not think of going there without me." "I go there, Friday?" says I. "What shall I do there?" He turned very quick upon me at this. "You do great deal much good," says he. "You teach wild mans be good, sober, tame mans. You tell them know God, pray God, and live new life." "Alas, Friday," says I, "thou knowest not what thou sayest. I am but an ignorant man myself." "Yes, yes," says he, "you teach me good, you teach them good." "No, no, Friday," says I, "you shall go without me. Leave me here to live by myself, as I did before." He looked confused again at that word, and running to one of the hatchets which he used to wear, he takes it up hastily, and gives it to me. "What must I do with this?" says I to him. "You take kill Friday," says he. "What must kill you for?" said I again. He returns very quick, "What you send Friday away for?" "Take kill Friday, no send Friday away." This he spoke so earnestly, that I saw tears stand in his eyes. In a word, I so plainly discovered the utmost affection in him to me, and a firm resolution in him, that I told him then and often after, that I would never send him away from me, if he was willing to stay with me. Upon the whole, as I found by all his discourse a settled affection to me, and that nothing could part him from me, so I found all the foundation of his desire to go to his own country was laid in his ardent affection to the people, and his hopes of my doing them good, a thing which, as I had no notion of myself, so I had not the least thought or intention, or desire of undertaking it. But still I found a strong inclination to attempting my escape, founded on the supposition gathered from the discourse, that there were 17 bearded men there, and therefore, without any more delay, I went to work with Friday, to find out a great tree proper to fell, and make a large piragua, or canoe, to undertake the voyage. There were trees enough in the island, to have built a little fleet, not of piraguas or canoes, but even of good, large vessels. But the main thing I looked at was, to get one so near the water, that we might launch it when it was made, to avoid the mistake I committed at first. At last Friday pitched upon a tree, for I found he knew much better than I, what kind of wood was fittest for it. Nor can I tell to this day, what wood to call the tree we cut down, except that it was very like the tree we call fustic, or between that and the Nicaragua wood, for it was much of the same color and smell. Friday wished to burn the hollow, or cavity of this tree out, to make it for a boat, but I showed him how to cut it with tools, which, after I had showed him how to use, he did very handily, and in about a month's hard labor we finished it, and made it very handsome, especially when, with our axes, which I showed him how to handle, we cut and hewed the outside into the true shape of a boat. After this, however, it cost us near a fortnight's time to get her along, as it were inch by inch, upon great rollers into the water, but when she was in, she would have carried 20 men with great ease. When she was in the water, though she was so big, it amazed me to see with what dexterity, and how swift my man Friday could manage her, turn her, and paddle her along. So I asked him if he would, and if we might venture over in her. "Yes," he said, "we venture over in her very well, though great low wind." However, I had a further design, that he knew nothing of, and that was, to make a mast and a sail, and to fit her with an anchor and cable. as to a mast, that was easy enough to get. So I pitched upon a straight young cedar tree, which I found near the place, and which there were great plenty of in the island, and I set Friday to work to cut it down, and gave him directions how to shape and order it. But as to the sail, that was my particular care. I knew I had old sails, or rather pieces of old sails, enough, but as I had had them now 26 years by me, and had not been very careful to preserve them, not imagining that I should ever have this kind of use for them, I did not doubt, but they were all rotten, and, indeed, most of them were so. However, I found 2 pieces which appeared pretty good, and with these I went to work, and with a great deal of pains, and awkward stitching, you may be sure, for want of needles, I at length made a 3-cornered ugly thing, like what we call in England a shoulder of mutton sail, to go with a boom at bottom, and a little short sprit at the top, such as usually our ship's long boats sail with, and such as I best knew how to manage, as it was such a one as I had to the boat in which I made my escape from Barbary, as related in the first part of my story. I was near 2 months performing this last work, viz. Rigging and fitting my masts and sails, for I finished them very complete, making a small stay, and a sail, or foresail, to it, to assist if we should turn to windward. And, what was more than all, I fixed a rudder to the stern of her to steer with. I was but a bungling shipwright, yet as I knew the usefulness, and even necessity of such a thing, I applied myself with so much pains to do it, that at last I brought it to pass, though, considering the many dull contrivances I had for it that failed, I think it cost me almost as much labor as making the boat. After all this was done, I had my man Friday to teach, as to what belonged to the navigation of my boat, though he knew very well how to paddle a canoe, he knew nothing of what belonged to a sail and a rudder, and was the most amazed, when he saw me work the boat to, and again in the sea by the rudder, and how the sail jibed, and filled this way or that way as the course we sailed changed. I say when he saw this, he stood like one astonished and amazed. However, with a little use, I made all these things familiar to him, and he became an expert sailor, except that of the compass I could make him understand very little. On the other hand, as there was very little cloudy weather, and seldom or never any fogs in those parts, there was the less occasion for a compass, seeing the stars were always to be seen by night, and the shore by day, except in the rainy seasons, and then nobody cared to stir abroad either by land or sea. I was now entered on the 27th year of my captivity in this place, though the 3 last years that I had this creature with me ought rather to be left out of the account, my habitation being quite of another kind than in all the rest of the time. I kept the anniversary of my landing here with the same thankfulness to God for his mercies as at first. And if I had such cause of acknowledgement at first, I had much more so now, having such additional testimonies of the care of Providence over me, and the great hopes I had of being effectually and speedily delivered. For I had an invincible impression upon my thoughts, that my deliverance was at hand, and that I should not be another year in this place. I went on, however, with my husbandry, digging, planting, and fencing as usual. I gathered and cured my grapes, and did every necessary thing as before. The rainy season was in the meantime upon me, when I kept more within doors than at other times. We had stowed our new vessel as secure as we could, bringing her up into the creek, where, as I said in the beginning, I landed my rafts from the ship, and hauling her up to the shore at high water mark, I made my man Friday dig a little dock, just big enough to hold her, and just deep enough to give her water enough to float in, and then, when the tide was out, we made a strong dam across the end of it, to keep the water out, and so she lay, dry as to the tide from the sea. And to keep the rain off we laid a great many boughs of trees, so thick that she was as well thatched as a house, and thus we waited for the months of November and December, in which I designed to make my adventure. When the settled season began to come in, as the thought of my design returned with the fair weather, I was preparing daily for the voyage. And the first thing I did was to lay by a certain quantity of provisions, being the stores for our voyage, and intended in a week or a fortnight's time to open the dock and launch out our boat. I was busy one morning upon something of this kind, when I called to Friday and bid him to go to the seashore and see if he could find a turtle or a tortoise, a thing which we generally got once a week, for the sake of the eggs as well as the flesh. Friday had not been long gone, when he came running back, and flew over my outer wall or fence, like one that felt not the ground, or the steps he set his foot on. And before I had time to speak to him, he cries out to me, "O master! O master! O sorrow! O bad! What's the matter, Friday?" says one. "O yonder there," says he, "one, two, three canoes. One, two, three." By this way of speaking I concluded there were six, but on inquiry I found there were but three. "Well, Friday," says I, "do not be frightened." So I heartened him up as well as I could. However, I saw the poor fellow was most terribly scared, for nothing ran in his head, but that they were come to look for him, and would cut him in pieces and eat him, and the poor fellow trembled, so that I scarcely knew what to do with him. I comforted him as well as I could, and told him I was in as much danger as he, and that they would eat me as well as him. "But," says I, "Friday, we must resolve to fight them." "Can you fight, Friday?" "Me shoot," says he, "but there come many great number." "No matter for that," said I again, "our guns will fright them, that we do not kill." So I asked him whether, if I resolved to defend him, he would defend me, and stand by me, and do just as I bid him. He said, "Me die when you bid die, master." So I went and fetched a good dram of rum and gave him, for I had been so good a husband of my rum, that I had a great deal left. When we had drunk it, I made him take the two fowling pieces, which we always carried, and loaded them with large swan shot, as big as small pistol bullets. Then I took four muskets, and loaded them with two slugs and five small bullets each, and my two pistols I loaded with a brace of bullets each. I hung my great sword, as usual, naked by my side, and gave Friday his hatchet. When I had thus prepared myself, I took my perspective glass, and went up to the side of the hill, to see what I could discover, and I found quickly by my glass, that there were 120 savages, 3 prisoners, and 3 canoes, and that their whole business seemed to be the triumphant banquet upon these 3 human bodies. A barbarous feast, indeed, but nothing more than, as I had observed, was usual with them. I observed also, that they had landed, not where they had done, when Friday made his escape, but nearer to my creek, where the shore was low, and where a thick wood came almost close down to the sea. This, with the abhorrence of the inhuman errand these wretches came about, filled me with such indignation, that I came down again to Friday, and told him I was resolved to go down to them, and kill them all, and asked him, if he would stand by me. He had now got over his fright, and his spirits being a little raised with the dram I had given him, he was very cheerful, and told me, as before, he would die when I bid die. In this fit of fury I divided the arms which I had charged, as before, between us. I gave Friday 1 pistol to stick in his girdle, and 3 guns upon his shoulder, and I took 1 pistol and the other 3 guns myself, and in this posture we marched out. I took a small bottle of rum in my pocket, and gave Friday a large bag with more powder and bullets, and as to orders, I charged him to keep close behind me, and not to stir, or shoot, or do anything till I bid him, and in the meantime, not to speak a word. In this posture I fetched a compass to my right hand of near a mile, as well to get over the creek, as to get into the wood, so that I could come within shot of them, before I should be discovered, which I had seen by my glass it was easy to do. While I was making this march, my former thoughts returning, I began to abate my resolution. I do not mean that I entertained any fear of their number, for as they were naked, unarmed wretches, it is certain I was superior to them, nay, though I had been alone. But it occurred to my thoughts, what call, what occasion, much less what necessity I was in to go, and dip my hands in blood, to attack people who had neither done, or intended me any wrong. Who, as to me, were innocent, and whose barbarous customs were their own disaster, being in them a token, indeed, of God's having left them, with the other nations of that part of the world, to such stupidity, and to such inhuman courses, but did not call me to take upon me to be a judge of their actions, much less an executioner of his justice, that whenever he thought fit he would take the cause into his own hands, and by national vengeance, punish them as a people for national crimes, but that, in the meantime, it was none of my business, that it was true Friday might justify it, because he was a declared enemy, and in a state of war with those very particular people, and it was lawful for him to attack them, but I could not say the same with regard to myself. These things were so warmly pressed upon my thoughts all the way as I went, that I resolved I would only go and place myself near them, that I might observe their barbarous feast, and that I would act then as God should direct. But that unless something offered that was more a call to me than yet I knew of, I would not meddle with them. With this resolution I entered the wood, and, with all possible wariness and silence, Friday following close at my heels, I marched till I came to the skirts of the wood on the side which was next to them, only that one corner of the wood lay between me and them. Here I called softly to Friday, and showing him a great tree which was just at the corner of the wood, I bade him go to the tree, and bring me word, if he could see there plainly what they were doing. He did so, and came immediately back to me, and told me they might be plainly viewed there, that they were all about their fire, eating the flesh of one of their prisoners, and that another lay bound upon the sand a little from them, whom he said they would kill next. And this fired the very soul within me. He told me it was not one of their nation, but one of the bearded men he had told me of, that came to their country in the boat. I was filled with horror at the very naming of the white bearded man, and going to the tree, I saw plainly by my glass a white man, who lay upon the beach of the sea with his hands, and his feet tied with flax, or things like rushes, and that he was an European, and had clothes on. There was another tree and a little thicket beyond it, about 50 yards nearer to them than the place where I was, which, by going a little way about, I saw I might come at undiscovered, and that then I should be within half a shot of them. So I withheld my passion, though I was indeed enraged to the highest degree, and going back about 20 paces, I got behind some bushes, which held all the way till I came to the other tree, and then came to a little rising ground, which gave me a full view of them at the distance of about 80 yards. I had now not a moment to lose, for 19 of the dreadful wretches sat upon the ground, all close huddled together, and had just sent the other two to butcher the poor Christian, and bring him perhaps limb by limb to their fire, and they were stooping down to untie the bands at his feet. I turned to Friday. "Now, Friday," said I, "do as I bid thee." Friday said he would. "Then, Friday," says I, "do exactly as you see me do, fail in nothing." So I set down one of the muskets, and the fowling piece upon the ground, and Friday did the like by his, and with the other musket I took my aim at the savages, bidding him to do the like, then asking him if he was ready, he said, "Yes." "Then fire at them," said I, and at the same moment I fired also. Friday took his aim, so much better than I, that on the side, that he shot he killed two of them, and wounded three more, and on my side I killed one, and wounded two. They were, you may be sure, in a dreadful consternation. And all of them that were not hurt jumped upon their feet, but did not immediately know which way to run, or which way to look, for they knew not from whence their destruction came. Friday kept his eyes close upon me, that, as I had bid him, he might observe what I did. So, as soon as the first shot was made, I threw down the piece, and took up the fowling piece, and Friday did the like. He saw me cock and present. He did the same again. Are you ready, Friday? Said one. Yes, says he. Let fly then, says I, in the name of God. And with that I fired again among the amazed wretches, and so did Friday. And as our pieces were now loaded with what I call swan shot, or small pistol bullets, we found only two drop. But so many were wounded, that they ran about yelling and screaming like mad creatures, all bloody, and most of them miserably wounded, whereof three more fell quickly after, though not quite dead. Now, Friday, says I, laying down the discharged pieces, and Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.